Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
The information depicted in this podcast is purely for informational purposes only. Please consult your healthcare professional before making any changes to your lifestyle or routine.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Boost Your Biology podcast. My name is Lucas and I am the founder of Ergogenic Health. Together in this podcast series, we will go underground to explore cutting-edge health and human performance insights that you simply cannot search on Google to help you upgrade your existence. So without any further ado, let's jump into today's episode. Hello, everyone, and welcome to yet another episode of the Boost Your Biology podcast. Today, I am joined in with a very special friend of mine from the US, Ryan Smith, who really is a pioneer when it comes to anti-aging medicine, peptides, and research chemicals. So in the last few weeks, actually, we've been messaging and bouncing ideas and sharing some cool research papers and things like that. But today, we are specifically focusing on a fairly new technology and a specific sort of analysis software that will determine your epigenetics and learn more about your DNA methylation. So, Ryan, welcome to the show, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me back on. Always a pleasure.
Awesome. So, Ryan, do you want to give my audience a bit of an understanding into, I guess, like in a general consensus, like what is epigenetics?
Yeah, so epigenetics is essentially the things that are happening to your genome above that baseline DNA sequence. And so, you know, the way I always like to explain it is that every cell in your body has the exact same DNA. What makes each of these phenotypes different? What makes your skin cells and your heart cells? And it's all of that epigenetic programming. So silencing of genes, activation of some genes. And, you know, part of our fundamental developmental biology is essentially, methylating and demethylating things in certain tissues. And so really epigenetics is a way that your body regulates your DNA to really give that sort of that basic dogma of biochemistry, right? Going from DNA to RNA to peptides and proteins. This is sort of that step between the DNA and the RNA, where the epigenetics are able to control what types of DNA sequences get made into that RNA.
Awesome. So maybe let's take a step back and, because today's episode, we're really going to focus on, measuring aging and that aging process itself. So let's have a look at some of the, Well, let's have a look at some of the hallmarks of aging, because I know there are various sort of elements that contribute to it. So what, let's sort of run through some of those.
Yeah. So the hallmarks of aging are, I would say, pretty well defined at this point. You know, most people say, you know, there are 8 or 9 of them, depending on who you ask. You know, a lot of those things tend to be things that are things a lot of your listeners will probably be familiar with. Things like, you know, probably one of the most common right now and probably one of the biggest topics is senescence, right? And so whenever cells essentially sort of metabolically pause, they stop replicating. And in that time period, they get, you know, a lot of inflammatory markers, which are obviously not good and cause that inflammaging process, as they call it. And so that's one of the big ones. You know, the other things like telomere attrition, obviously, where we, you know, lose some of our telomeres as we undergo replicative burdens. Some of those things are going to be like stem cell depletion or nutrient sensing issues, loss of proteostasis, or, you know, dysregulated protein manufacturing. So those are some of, I would say, the big ones for sure. The problem with a lot of those is that a lot of them don't have direct blood biomarkers, right? You know, things like senescence can be pretty hard to measure. Some people are doing beta gal as a measurement of senescence, other, you know, but clinically it's not super relevant yet. And so we don't really have a way to, I would say, objectively look at a lot of those data points to tell how someone's aging. So forever and you know, for a long, long time, people have wanted really one objective diagnostic marker, which is able to tell us how we're doing on that aging process, because age is such a big risk factor. Our chronological age is such a big risk factor for all of these different types of diseases.
Mm. Yeah. You just mentioned the chronological age. So I want to sort of break down those two terms, because we obviously have the biological age and the chronological age. So do you want to expand upon that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. So the chronological age is pretty easy, right? It's the age that you would call yourself, or the number of, you know, candles on your birthday cake, so to speak. But the biological age is a little bit more complicated, because that is sort of how your body is aging in respect of to, you know, sort of the total population, or where you are at on sort of your lifespan journey, and everyone's is going to be independent. So your biological age is sort of the age of your body, rather than the age of how long your body has lived, sort of how your body is functioning. It's more of a physiological measurement rather than just a time one. One of the ways I always like to talk about that is, you know, looking at different things like twin studies. You know, people who have the exact same baseline DNA might age or be at different predispositions to different types of diseases. And a lot of that can be mitigated by how they live their life. And, you know, all the factors that play into that: nutrition, diet, exercise, sleep, stress, you know, all those same things are what are actually taking a toll on our bodies as well. And you know, we start to see that there's a lot of phenotypic variation between even the people, the same DNA, and we're able to actually measure that phenotypic variation or that baseline biological age with things like this epigenetic measurement.
Mm. So what else is currently out there in terms of analyzing or measuring someone's the aging process itself? What's currently out there right now?
So there's a lot. You know, probably one of the most popular is one we've already mentioned, is the telomere measurements. You know, the telomere measurements have forever been, I would say, really, really exciting, because we know that they decrease as our cells undergo replication. And the longer we live, the more replication our cells go under. And we know also that at one point, cells that undergo too much replication will lose their telomeres, and then they'll undergo replicative senescence, right? Whereas where those cells, again, sort of stop replicating as a way to sort of protect against any type of DNA damage. So telomeres have been a very, very popular one. But in the more recent years, as things like artificial intelligence and computer learning become a little bit more prevalent, the investigation into all biomarkers as it relates to age have been popular. So, you know, as we talk about the multiome, or going back to that central dogma of biochemistry, where you go from, you know, DNA to the epigenetics, to the transcriptomics, to the proteomics, to the, you know, the metabolomics, the phenomics, and then also the microbiome, all of those have been looked at as to see what changes with age, and can you adequately look at any of those to predict age accurately. And I would say that right now there's been a lot of developments in all of those. One example is a product called GlycanAge, which uses essentially glycosylated proteins as a marker. you know, transcriptomics and have been a big one as well. And then even the metabolome has been, you know, looking at metabolites in the blood that change with age. However, there's a really, really great review paper that goes over all of those metrics and really concludes that the sort of the most well-validated and the most predictive for these health outcomes tends to be the epigenetic age. And so that is really what we're specializing in. And I really think that the epigenetics, particularly epigenetic methylation, is probably the best diagnostic marker to be able to predict age. And really, through some of these studies that have come out since really the Hallmark publication in 2013, have really started to say that epigenetics may be monitoring some of this baseline process of aging that is ubiquitous across all animal species.
Mm, phenomenal. So, Ryan, I want to ask you about just sort of like which branch of medicine, or how do you really think that this sort of having this sort of data, like how can we apply it to medicine?
Well, so that's the beauty of it, is that now with these computer learning algorithms, we're able to apply it generally to all outcomes. And that's one of the beauties of these epigenetic measurements, too, is that they gather so much data, and it can be such precise data that you can really start to detect things way before you would typically see them in traditional medicine. You know, one example I always like to bring up is the stage zero cancer detection via epigenetics. And people know this usually as a term called liquid biopsy. And it's just exactly as it sounds. You take a blood sample and you're able to essentially see if there's any cancer in the system, even at very, very individualized cell levels. So really, really low detection quantities. And the reason for that is the epigenetics can be so precise if you sort of have these computer learning systems, which can correlate them to other covariate outcomes. So in the case of cancer, cancer would be the outcome. In the case of age would be the outcome. And in some of these newer algorithms, like GrimAge, for instance, which is Dr. Horvath's probably most popular algorithm, he's even able to predict death with this epigenetic measurement.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it gets wild. I mean, you start to enter a sci-fi realm very, very quickly because, you know, we can take your blood and say, you know, how many macronutrients you've eaten over the past week. We can tell you how much you've smoked or drank across your entire lifetime. The amount of data that we can get from these epigenetic measurements are different than the data we can get from your DNA. A lot of times it's not personally identifiable, but the information that we can detect from it still is powerful. And the way that can apply to health is too countless to really even see. And really the steps would be, first, you have to decide an algorithm. First, come up with a way to measure whatever you're hoping to measure. It might be progression to Alzheimer's. It might be, performance on your, a 40-yard dash. But if you start to get this information and use these big data sets and big computer learning platforms, you start to see what markers are associated with things like speed or associated with things like Parkinson's development. And so what you get to do is you have an algorithm that's able to predict this. The next question goes to, now that we have an algorithm to predict it, how do we change the markers we know are predictive of that risk?
Yeah, that's definitely an element of this that really excites me, is the whole sort of athletic performance part of things for athletes, you know, taking advantage of this sort of technology and then utilizing strategies and you know, biohacking and implementing peptides and supplements like that really excites me.
Yeah, it's crazy. In some of the products that I know you and I like the 5-Amino-1-MQ, for instance, it's already being studied to reverse biological age in muscle tissue via some of these epigenetic clocks. And so what we're starting to get to is this leading area of medicine where, this is used as an objective marker to validate some of the things that we're seeing clinically, right? You know, I've had my crazy experience with the 5-Amino-1-MQ, but I would also love to see it, from a molecular standpoint, actually make a difference on my lab metrics. I would love to see that. In addition to just experiencing that effect, it's also good to have that baseline data, because that data is reproducible, not just to me, but to everyone. And that's really where this is exciting, is no longer do anti-aging treatments have to be, hey, try it and see what happens. We can have methods to actually validate and expand our use of these medications to help the population. And I know I said this the first time we talked as well, but I think it's worth mentioning again for your listeners, the population level impact of things like reversing your aging rate or your epigenetic aging rate can be incredible. I always throw out the statistic that, you know, if everyone reversed their age by 7 years, you'd cut disease in half. 50% of people would no longer be sick, which is crazy. You know, if you reverse the aging rate by just 20%, you'd save the U.S. over $3 trillion in healthcare spending. And so you know, these things can make a big, big impact. And you know, a lot of people associate aging as a vanity thing, but it's absolutely not. It's way more than vanity. It is a risk factor that predisposes you to all of those diseases, which are the most popular, or I should say the most prevalent to die from or to get sick from.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing that, you know, when people like get on an anti-aging protocol and things like that, or they want to, you know, slow down aging, at the same time, they're also addressing, like, you know, they're going to be supporting mitochondrial function. They're going to be reducing oxidative stress. They're going to be, and a lot of these supplements and peptides, they actually work on all those different sort of pathways at the same time. So it's really cool just to see the crossover there.
Yeah. And that's the reason I got into this in the first place, is I started seeing things like, you know, the SS31, right, which is helping with the mitochondrial structure and mitochondrial energetics. And I said, you know, this has got to be having phenomenal population level impacts beyond just, you know, the one tagline, which most people remember about, you know, 6 months of daily ATP equivalent, you know, with one injection. So I mean, people always think of those things, but the population level impact and how it can help prevent these diseases, this was something I really, really wanted to quantify and take it out of more of a biohacking realm and sort of merging the idea of biohacking and medicine, because they are one and the same. And if you can quantify the effects, then you're that much closer to getting implemented on a larger scale.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure many of my listeners will already be familiar with 23andMe. So do you want to sort of break down how this can, well, how it differs to 23andMe?
Yeah, definitely. And you know, 23andMe obviously is not in Australia, but I think MyDNA is one of the big companies that's out there. But you know, all of these genetic companies are based on the same principle and actually the same technology. What they're doing is just essentially sequencing your DNA, especially at certain locations, locations which are more likely to have polymorphisms or different genetic variants. And we know a lot about those because some genes are essentially programmed and can affect how your health. For instance, you know, I have an APOE3. Which obviously predisposes me to Alzheimer's, right? And so that genetic information is still very relevant genetic information, especially with really, you know, with genes that are greatly related to different outcomes, like, you know, your BRCA mutations or some other things. And so the genetics is an important piece. However, genetics is very static. You can take that test once in your lifetime, and really that information is not going to change. And so I still think it's a fundamental process, but really there's not a lot you can do about it, because what you really want to do is you're not looking to change your genes. What you're looking to do is change the risk that you found in those genes, right? By changing your lifestyle. The epigenetics is a little bit different, because these epigenetic methylation markers do change. They don't change immediately or very, very quickly, but they do change, and you do have a large degree of control over them. You know, 60% of the methylation markers that we measure are based off of someone's own lifestyle. And so what it really does is put that control back into your hands, where you actually can change the expression of your genetic sequences. And that is the way that you can mitigate those risks.
Mm. Awesome. I've just thought of one thing just then. You sort of mentioned some of the DNA methylation targets and things like that, but I want to discuss some of the, like, I guess, from your perspective, what do you think has the biggest impact on, like, DNA methylation?
Well, that's a tough question. Methylation in humans in particular is a little bit different than a lot of other species, where we sort of become we're really methylated at a much higher level, and really it's about demethylating. And so and one thing I should note is that methylation is not necessarily good or bad, right? So in some genes we want there to be more methylation, other genes we want there to be less methylation. For instance, you know, tumor suppressor genes we would want to be activated. So we want them to be hypomethylated, because methylation can oftentimes silence genes. And we wouldn't want anything that's suppressing tumors to be silenced. You know, from the other way around, you know, oncogenes are the other way, right? We wouldn't want that to be, want that to be demethylated. And so with that being said, you want a balance of each, right? You really want your body to do what it's supposed to do. And really optimizing the process of the body doing that can be difficult. One of the things that often is mentioned is the MTHFR variants, you know, because You know, those are very, very common and can actually have a big impact on health. And one thing we do know is that they are related to how we methylate our genome. You know, the ability of substrates like, you know, methylfolate or, you know, homocysteine definitely impact how we methylate and regulate our DNA. But unfortunately, the question you ask, which is what's the biggest factor, I don't know that I can answer because I'm not sure that we have the data yet. You know, what we're able to do with our testing is really read the DNA. So we're able to essentially get a percentage of methylation at a lot of different places. But that data can still be nonsensical because we really need these algorithms or what these computer learning networks sort of print out or spit out. To be able to read that DNA and interpret it for different health outcomes. And so that's what we do is we take DNA, we purify it, we read the methylation, and then we interpret that methylation with these algorithms. And that's where we see a lot of benefit. And like I said, no area of medicine is going to be untouched by that at one point. Everything from, you know, fertility to cancer to just childhood development, psychiatric diseases, everything can be associated with methylation. And there's actually even here in the United States, several epigenetic drugs already on the market, which can prevent methylation of certain types of tissues in certain locations on the genome. And so this is a growing growing is probably an understatement, exploding science in a couple different areas, but definitely in longevity and definitely in cancer.
That's awesome, man. Well, actually, speaking of data and results, maybe did you want to, yeah, because I was fortunate enough to get my results done. So do you want to share some of what we found with my data?
Yeah, absolutely. So you know, you do have the distinction, and I can go on record if you don't mind me sharing your data. You do have the best rate of aging we've ever seen. And so there are a lot of insights, though, that we can get from this data. So to take a step back before I give you all this great news, we look at a lot of different things. You know, we run a lot of different algorithms. One algorithm we run is this idea of biological age, or sort of the age of your body. And ideally, for anyone who's doing this metric, what you really want to see there is an age that's lower than your actual chronological age. If you're doing that, then you're doing really, really well. You know, most of our data sources come from the United States. So you're a little bit of an outlier there, but I should mention that almost every male and almost everyone who grows up in the United States tends to have advanced aging. So, you know, just from being a male in the United States, you can sort of behind the eight ball a little bit. I don't know how that impacts you, but your aging rate was pretty great. And so your intrinsic aging rate was actually 24.16, which is again, pretty good. And then to break that down a little bit further, we also have this idea of the extrinsic aging rate. This is sort of the age of your immune system. And the reason that this is helpful is because the extrinsic aging rate is a little bit more highly correlated to things like death, for instance. So having a lower extrinsic epigenetic aging rate or immune system age tends to protect you against premature death. In that regard, you also had a great reading at 20.45. And so those are two great readings and definitely a good starting point for, especially for someone like yourself who specializes in biohacking. And a lot of times, that's a hard thing to do. And so, yeah. So those are two great data points and we can talk about those a lot, you know, our report, I think, as you've seen is over 80 pages long. It goes and breaks down really everything that's been correlated to a better or worse age. So I won't belabor that point, but I will say that having advanced aging, even if you're 1 year older biologically than you are chronologically, can have a lot of adverse health consequences. One of my favorite statistics is looking at cancer risk. For instance, every 1 year that you are older biologically than you are chronologically, you increase your risk of dying of cancer, increase your risk of getting cancer in the next 5 years by 6% for every 1 year. You increase your risk of dying of cancer in the next 3 years by actually 17%. And so even just a 1 year difference can make a big impact into a lot of different diseases. But in this case, obviously those statistics for cancer, but this applies to almost every age related disease. So everything that shows a correlation to age, which is most diseases, also shows a higher correlation to this idea of biological age, which allows us to be able to predict it and then hopefully in some cases prevent it. And there are a lot of things you can do to turn back that clock, probably things that you do already, which is maybe why your metrics look so good. We do a couple other metrics as well. We do some things like immune cell subsets. So we're actually able to predict, you know, things like your CD4 to CD8 ratio, which is a sort of a ratio of T cells, which can give us an idea of how good your immune function is. And usually you'd want that value to be between 1 and 4. And yours is perfect right there at 2.5. So again, that even looks good. And then probably my favorite out of all of the different algorithms is one called the Dunedin PoAM study. And obviously the Dunedin, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. It's a town in New Zealand. And they're actually, with this algorithm, they're actually able to calculate the instantaneous rate of aging. So for instance, let's say that, you know, someone had a lifestyle in the past, which was not ideal. They might have had high stress, poor diet, lack of exercise, but suddenly turned their life around. You know, we want to give them actually feedback on what they're doing now so that they can improve that as much as possible. With biological age, you're not just getting what they're doing now, you're also getting everything they did in the past. But with this Dunedin PoAM algorithm, we're actually able to sort of give you the speedometer of aging. How fast are you going right now? And that is where we see your metric being probably the best metric I've ever seen, or certainly the best metric I've ever seen on that. And that's defined as anywhere from 0.6 biological years per year. That's the absolute lowest you can go, to around 1.4 biological years per year. And that's really the highest you can go. And the distribution of that is much like a bell curve, with almost everyone being right around one. And so very, very few people get to the periphery of those two measurements. You did. So your rate of aging was 0.65, essentially 0.657 biological years per year, which is absolutely phenomenal. Definitely in the top 99th percentile, which is good, because what we're able to say is that, hey, whatever you're doing, keep doing.
Yeah, that's sick, man.
Yeah.
Interesting. So with that, I guess with that information, where do you sort of see, are you guys thinking of branching out and expanding upon that in any way, or?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, one of the beauties about these algorithms is that they might give you a biological age, but that's not where they're super powerful. Where they're powerful is relating that biological age to your risk of other diseases.
Yeah.
And so that is where this is so powerful, because we're able to predict, you know, risk of all of these different diseases, age-related diseases, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, you know, neurological conditions, cancer. All of these things are highly, highly correlated to that metric that you just got, right? So no longer do you have to sort of, you know, think of health as a binary thing where you're either healthy or you're sick. What you can start to think is if you sort of recondition your mind to think of aging as a disease itself, and mitigating that process can also mitigate your risk of all those other conditions. And so if you treat this as a way to give yourself varying degrees of healthiness, so to speak, and try and get this metric as low as possible, then you'll protect yourself against all those other diseases. So it makes all these, you know, preventative medicine things where people are trying to stay healthy and do the right thing, it makes it quantifiable. And that's the beauty of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I was wondering just then, like, imagine if I, you know, jumped on a really hardcore, like, anti-aging peptide protocol with like metformin mix, SS31. And then retest in like a year's time. It'd be interesting to see.
Yeah, I would love to see it. And you know, one of the things I should note is that you're probably not the most ideal candidate, right? You're pretty young already.
Yeah.
You know, what we really start to see is that people over 50 can make big impacts to their epigenetic age in short amount of time. You know, probably one of the most famous, and actually the trial that got me into this was called the TRIM trial. It was done at UCLA that looked at metformin, growth hormone, and DHEA as a way to reduce that epigenetic aging rate. It was only 9 patients, but they were able to reverse in just 1.5 years worth of time. They were able to reverse the aging rate right around 2.5 years for some of those patients. And so they were literally turning back the clock. And even more recently, a few weeks ago, Dr. Sinclair from Harvard published a study where he used Yamanaka factors to reprogram these cells to reverse their epigenetic age. And the impact of that was that he was able to restore vision in blind mice. So we know that this aging process is incredibly important to all different levels of health. And if we can prevent it, that's a good thing. And, you know, I talk about it just like I would talk about DNA mutations, because essentially that's what it is. If your epigenetics are not regulated appropriately, then you're going to start to develop some issues. And it's the same way with DNA. If you start to break your DNA or have, you know, substitution, you know, errors or other things like that, you start to get phenotypes that, you know, predispose you to things like cancer or to all these other diseases. It's the same way. You want to be able to give your DNA the ability to regulate itself most appropriately. And that's hopefully what we're trying to encourage. And the ways which we can encourage that are going to be different. You know, we're going to be able to validate all of these things that we do, right? All of the peptides, all of the lifestyle, sleep, stress, meditation. We're going to be able to quantify the effect of all of those on people, and not just on people, but individualized people. So yeah, we can tell you what might work for you versus what works for me. And so we're really getting into a new area of medicine where all of this diagnostic material is super valuable.
Yeah. With that, that algorithm you described from New Zealand, is there a PubMed study that talks about, or like, you know, is there research? Because I'd love to link that for my listeners. They'd love to read that.
Absolutely. I'll send it to you. I'll send it to you once we get off the line. But yes, the research has been done in collaboration with two universities, Columbia and Duke. And the lead author from each organization is going to be Terry Moffitt from Duke, and then Dan Belsky from Columbia. And to take it a step further, that algorithm has actually been vetted on some interventions as well, particularly caloric restriction. At a 25% caloric restriction, they've shown that they can sort of reduce that instantaneous aging rate. So that's actually what, you know, to be expected, right? That's what we would have anticipated would happen. But it's good to see it, again, proven in a molecular-based diagnostic to say that, hey, this is what's working. And now we can even start to compare things like, you know, caloric restriction versus time-restricted feeding versus, you know, things like Prolon and these fasting mimicking diets. And then we can even start to add in things that might increase autophagy, like, you know, the 3-4-DMC or, you know, resveratrol, pterostilbene, or, you know, the whatever, spermidine, whatever it might be, right? We can start to then really optimize these protocols so that whenever we say, oh, it's time for a fast, you know, well, we're going to maximize it with this perfect thing for your biology.
Yeah. Actually, something that came to my mind as you're talking through some of the modalities is, I think in the future, maybe in a few months from now, I'd love to put together a really like comprehensive longevity anti-aging webinar where like a just multi-pronged approach, you know, diet, stress, exercise, diets. It'd just be so cool to build something like that.
Exactly. Yes. And it is multi-pronged, right? All of these things make a difference. And we've always known they have, but now being able to tie them all together into one metric is really, really valuable. And I think that that's where we're going hopefully aging will be classified as a disease sooner rather than later. And then we'll start to get more money poured into this idea of preventative medicine to not just treat people when they get sick, but to prevent people from getting sick in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. I love that. Well, for those listening in, you guys can find a link to the True Diagnostic testing kit. We've organized a coupon code for you, Lucas50, LUCAS50. But Ryan, was there any other things you wanted to mention about the technology itself or anything else?
Well, yeah. We've got a lot of really interesting things coming out, especially in those other things to the hallmark, you know, regarding the hallmarks of aging. We hope to have a senescence burden predictor to see how well you might respond to different types of senolytics, like, you know, dasatinib, quercetin, or even fizetin. You know, we hope to come up with a lot more developments. We're looking to everything, as I mentioned, things for fertility and sperm, right? How to reduce your risk of and make sure you have the best offspring to really every area of medicine. So this is a growing thing. And one thing I should mention is that you will continue to add value. We actually release a report, a new report on the data if you test it with us about every 4 weeks. So this will be a continual thing. And one thing that we also hope you retest maybe once or every twice per year. And so hopefully that's a good thing. One thing I should mention as well is that if someone gets a test and they come back at advanced aging, maybe not have the same values as you, definitely not a concern, because that's exactly why we're doing this in the first place, right? To get a baseline and then to compete with yourself to get as low as possible. So no one should be too scared about having an advanced aging metric. It is changeable.
Exactly. And the other thing about that is, like, you know, we're tracking our steps, we're tracking other metrics, but now having this sort of data, all of those other modalities that we're trying to hit, you know, hit those targets are going to impact the ultimate outcome, which is this.
Exactly. And I think that we're actually, you beat me to the punch. In the next few weeks, we're actually going to be launching an app that will be able to link in all of your blood metrics. It'll be able to link in all of your wearables like Oura Ring, that it will be able to link in your EMR and your doctor's notes. So you can have everything all in one place, and you can start to correlate as best as possible the things that make a difference to your individual aging process.
That's cool. That's really cool. Just one final question. I just realized HRV, have you sort of seen any links there between?
Yeah. So we have the data. We're starting to collect the data, but unfortunately there's been no published trials and we probably don't have enough data to anecdotally report anything. But definitely I would say a marker that we're very focused on.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, Ryan, thanks so much for joining me again, man. It's been a pleasure having you on. Yeah. Looking forward to, I know my listeners are going to love this one. We'll be sending this out on YouTube very soon. And again, for those listening in who want to actually order the True Diagnostic Kit, you'll be seeing it on my website. It's on the front page of my site. And then I'll have a link in the video description for this. And you can use the code Lucas50. That'll save you $50. So, Ryan, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks, Lucas. Hope to be back soon with some more developments.
Of course, man. All right.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, everyone, for joining in to today's episode. For in-depth show notes and lessons learned, visit nofilter.media/boostyourbiology.
This has been a No Filter Media production.
Say what you want.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.